All right, welcome everybody. Mike Adams here with a special guest here. I haven't interviewed him in years. It's been a while, but I've been wanting to get him back on. He's gracious enough to join me for a late night discussion about things happening in the world. It's Jay Dyer. His website is jaysanalysis.com. He's also a fill-in host from time to time on Infowars.com, and I think he offers an outstanding analysis of world events. He really gets it. He understands history and what's going on in the world and can really connect the dots. So I've got a lot of questions. Mr. Dyer, welcome. It's awesome to have you on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I was just telling you earlier, I remember I met you at the Secret Space Program conference years ago, and we were chatting outside, and you had like a portable interview studio in your truck. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we did.
It's glad to reconnect and really honored to be with you. You've done a lot of great work over the years.
Yeah, that was the only way we could get an interview without all this crazy background noise from the conference.
But it
totally worked. Well, today we're doing it this way, remotely. So a lot has happened, obviously, since then. And recently, I'm going to direct this to you. My sense is that humanity is reaching, or at least a lot of people are reaching, some kind of a breaking point where they're tired of having their infrastructure dismantled. They're tired of vote rigging. They're tired of the genocide of vaccines, and they're tired of all the inflation and their money becoming worthless. So what's your sense of that? We're seeing a lot of angry people. Where do you think this is going? Or have we reached a tipping point, or will people lie down and take abuse for a lot longer?
Well, I think we've seen a series of big events that were really catalysts. Like, and it's almost like they were timed, like they happened one after another, perfectly almost to wake everybody up. And I'm not reading too much into that like it's a bad thing. It's a great thing. I mean, the situation with Trump, that woke a lot of people up, because Trump was for 4 years basically just talking about the media being a bunch of liars, right? Mainstream media is lying. And so he was good in that he called attention to that stronghold that the media had on everybody's mind for, you know, decades, right? So that was one of the great things that Trump did. Even if he didn't succeed, you know, in doing everything, and even if we disagree with some of the things that he did end up doing, he did at least, you know, call attention to the you know, fake news. And that really solidified everybody's mind when it came to, look, we're being lied to on a mass scale. Then I think subsequent events like the last 3 years of crazy nonsense, which was clearly planned, that woke a lot of people up. They saw that, hey, wait a minute, this is all a big lie. We've been lied to about what, you know, the meaning of COVID was and what it was all for. And there was all these drills that planned for this very event, which suggests, you know, pre-planning as a plandemic. Then we see, you know, another catalyst event like the, you know, economy crashing after all of this, which, again, I think was by design to push us into this, you know, technocratic surveillance grid. And so people started realizing, hey, that's not really what COVID was. It wasn't about being sick. It was about social engineering. That was about changing people's attitudes towards how we live and what we do on a daily basis and how we conduct, you know, economic exchange. That's what COVID was really about, changing people. That's it. And then Klaus, thank you so much, Klaus, because Klaus came out and told everybody the whole plan on a mass scale. You know, we will be inside you. We're going to get inside your body. We're going to change you, change your DNA. So he laid it all out there for us. And now, you know, we've got more catalysts. We've got more pop stars coming out. Britney Spears, Kanye talking about having handlers, you know, stuff that people in the conspiracy world had said for years. Vindicated. Everything that we said is being vindicated. Election fraud, right? Roger Stone had a great piece a couple of years ago about how the very guy that the CIA would use to rig elections in other countries is the guy who was like rigging, you know, the last election. So people have just seen after every one of these big catalyst type of events that, man, everything is a lie and everything the conspiracy theorist said is true.
Well, that is absolutely true. I'm going to ask you more questions on that. But first, that's a really incredible Klaus Schwab impersonation, by the way. I think that's one of the best I've heard. And not bad on the Trump either. You have a voice acting talent that could also come in handy.
Well, I'm a little sick, so maybe I could do it better if I went sick. But I appreciate that.
No, I think actually the sicker you are, the better it sounds for Klaus.
Right? It'll be inside your body.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, you're nailing it. So what this acceleration has accomplished is bringing so many things into the light and into consciousness among people around the world, where without this, those things would have stayed hidden potentially forever. Like I never thought I would even live to see the day where over 50% of the population was skeptical of vaccines. There used to be, 2%.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now it's 50+%. And here we are. And I want to mention too, by the way, your website is jaysanalysis.com for people to find your work. And also you've got a new book out, Essays on Theology and Philosophy. Can you show us that book?
Yeah, right there.
Okay, cool. And that's available at your website. I just want to plug that for you. We'll come back to that. I want to ask you what's on your site. But isn't it amazing the how fast the awakening is happening?
Yeah, it's like, you have a big catalyst event, and then maybe another year you'd have a big catalyst event. And now it's like every couple months we get a big event. And, I don't know why. It's just, Alex talks all the time about how things speed up and the craziness gets faster and faster. I know you've talked about that as well for many years. So, all the people that are in your domain and Alex's domain, you guys have been so spot on for so long. So, I mean, really, I should be asking you, why do you think that, why is it going so much faster now? Is it something like metaphysical or spiritual, or is it just like the global elites are like scrambling? And I mean, I want to know what you think.
Well, if you're asking me, my answer is that the globalists always knew this was going to become evident in the final stages of their plan, because they couldn't hide it forever, and that they've simply accelerated their plan. And so that's why these things are becoming apparent now. But what's amazing to me, and I'll redirect back to you, is how many people are still going along with, for example, vaccine-assisted suicide, even though it's abundantly obvious now that it's killing people. But there are still people out there calling for booster shots. Or, at the same time, how many people continue to put their money in a bank in dollars, even though dollars are losing about 2% a month in purchasing value, and yet they still play the dollar game while they're losing. It's worse than going to Vegas. I mean, actually, a lot of Vegas casinos have payouts that are better than 98%, at the machines. Right. Some of them are like 99%, but not the dollar. You lose 2% every month. So your thoughts?
I haven't done a lot of gambling, but I know that Jamie and I, we went one time gambling a couple of years ago at a nice casino. And the only game I wanted to play was the roulette, just with red and black, because I felt like I had at least a 50-50 chance. So I think we gambled like $100, and then we left there with like $150. So I came out better than if I just had my money in the bank. That's funny to think about. I never thought about that. But yeah, I think that, I watched really closely and followed the FTX collapse. And so that's a great analogy in my mind for how the actual Federal Reserve works, right? The Federal Reserve is based on the same fiat model of, we'll create infinite digit tokens, and you keep giving us your money, your hard work, the real money. Dollars are also fiat, but in the sense that dollars can still be exchanged for real things. And then, what I think that was a giant Democratic Party slush fund, money laundering operation. So they were able to get all this money, it functions on many levels to do many things, like come after Bitcoin, to press for greater legislation on things like Bitcoin. I think Sam Bankman-Fried was pushing for that when he was having those meetings with Maxine Waters and all these people. So it does many things, but it also seems to be a way to push us towards the central bank digital currency. It's an attack on Bitcoin, in my view. It's also a way to send money to Democrats, funnel money to them. I think he gave $40 million to Biden. So, and this is just people's money.
A long list of Democrats, he gave $40 million. Right. I think Biden got like $5 million or something himself.
I thought it was like $40 million, but maybe it was $40 million to the Democratic Party.
I think it was $40 million to Democrats. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So and I think that model, as you know, is this kind of the same as the Federal Reserve, right? I mean, it's a debt based currency. So that's another wake up call to a lot of people for all the bad parts of what happened with that. That's an example of a catalyzing event that's just further waking people up. But like you said, the vaccines, like in my own family, extended family, most people have pretty much like they've turned anti-vaccine. I mean, they saw me as somebody just crazy for so long. Right. And the weird part was, one of the global elite lectures that we did was on Jonas Salk's book, Survival of the Wisest. And if you read Jonas Salk's book, he actually says we'll use vaccinations as a way to experiment on human beings. I mean, he was There's the father of inoculations, and the title of the book is a eugenics-based book. It's called Survival of the Wisest, meaning that we, the scientific elite, are the wisest, and we will decide who survives, right? So it's playing on survival of the fittest from Darwin, or, well, Darwinism, generally speaking, but he's playing on that and saying we will be the ones that will decide who goes into the future, and we will use inoculations as a way to experiment and as a way to try to create infertility. I mean, he says all this in that book is wild. And here's this, you know, heralded hero of inoculations. And, you know, for me, I'm like, you know, I'm not a scientist. I read a lot of philosophy, but I know you do a lot more when it comes to science and you have a lab and all that. But, you know, as a guy who's a philosopher, I don't know science per se. If I see the guy who's like the guy for vaccines saying, let's use vaccines to experiment and kill everybody, that's all I need. That's enough for me to be a skeptic. When it comes to mass inoculations, and as everybody knows, I mean, this modern big pharma stuff, it's not even a vaccine. It's actually worse. It's, you know, it's an experiment, basically, your big science experiment.
But adding to that, what was really incredible is that the Jonas Salk Institute, very early on in this, also conducted research and published a science paper on the fact that the spike protein itself that's generated from the mRNA injections is itself pathogenic. So that the very so-called antigen that your body is producing is also making you sick. And which now we understand why. I mean, that because that's causing inflammation, that's causing damage throughout the system, and then people can shed that. But you know, you mentioned Jonas Salk admitting that, and then his own institute comes out with that study, and yet nobody at the FDA said, well, maybe we should stop this, even though they knew it was harming people. So the other thing that the public is waking up to is the maliciousness of the establishment. So, you know, think about the public trust and how it has been shattered in the CDC, the FDA, the FBI, the DOJ, what have you. And to your point on crypto, I tell people, if you thought the FTT token was bad, wait till you hear about the USD.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to get at last week on the fourth hour of Alex. Was trying to, you know, stress that parallel, and in this, you know, the whole big tech stuff, that's also another catalyzing event. You know, I'm skeptical in terms of what Elon Musk is all about, but from the public vantage point, just in terms of the optics, it's wild to see people going crazy. Regardless of what anybody thinks of Elon Musk, just of the idea of free speech. I mean, this is weird to see people, they're going nuts, freaking out like it's the end of the world, that we're going to have what was the case like a few years ago.
I know. So I know. It's incredible. They're terrified. Yeah,
the end of the world is returning to the way things were in like 2015. I mean, like, what? This is crazy, right?
No, but it shows you how far gone that they are and the polarization of society. But one of the things I wanted to ask you is about the path through all of this. Now, do you believe, and I honestly don't know the answer to this, and either way you answer it is totally okay with me. I respect your opinion on a lot of things. Do you think that there are, you know, white hat forces that are at work in any way that are going to be helpful, or is that hopium? Do we need to do it the hard way, elbow grease and hitting the streets on ballot harvesting for conservatives, or, you know, what do you think are pathways through this current situation?
You know, I mean, I guess I would have said the best hope would be, you know, local stuff. I don't have a whole lot of hope for national elections because I think they showed in the last election that they can steal an election. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't want to be blackpilled and get everybody in a negative attitude per se, but and you know, I think we have to be realistic and not expect that Washington is going to solve our problems or anything like that. So, yeah, the how we get through this, I'm not sure. I think that a lot of people I've talked to, a lot of prominent interviews that people have done recently, a lot of negative attitudes as to where we're going. So a lot of people think there may be an economic collapse coming. And, you know, it's very possible. I don't know. Certainly hope not. But, you know, we've been preparing for that. We've got a lot of storable food. I've never had storable food before. Now we do. We got a whole closet over there full of storable food. So, you know, I mean, prepare for the worst, hope for the best, I guess. There's probably some value still to being involved in politics, especially the local level. I just don't know about the national level. I mean, I hope that we get, you know, somebody halfway good in there, if that's what you're asking about, in terms of politics. But well, yeah.
Let me ask you this. I mean, some people believe that the fall of FTX, for example, is part of the fall of the cabal, whatever that means. And we put that in quotes, the cabal. You know, I tend to think globally, there's all kinds of factions and tribalism and competitive globalists and so on. And it's not just one monolithic, you know, orderly thing. It's not like Darth Vader in charge of everything. It's like a thousand Darth Vaders, which is worse. They all have lightsabers. But some people believe that, the fall of that was part of the takedown that's taking place, you know, and you have covered crypto. Do you think that fall was just an unintentional mistake on their part? Like they got too stupid and reckless and they imploded it before they wanted to?
Well, I think that one thing I covered is, I mean, a lot of these, especially these Democrat people, I mean, they're operating in on a high level. They're doing criminal stuff at a very high level. And I think when you have so many pop stars and business figures and people pushing this thing, and you got to try to run a lot of cogs and a lot of wheels in a big, gigantic scam, these kinds of things are going to collapse, and they collapse kind of all the time. Well, maybe not all the time, but I mean, you know, it's reminiscent of Enron. It's reminiscent of BitConnect. It's reminiscent of a bunch of previous sort of scams, kind of like it, Bernie Madoff's thing, right? So those things, I think, fall because it's kind of hard to make those things continue to work. But if nobody gets in trouble, then, you know, then they'll just keep doing these kinds of, you know, big level scams like this. So whether this is exposing the whole cabal, I don't think so, because crypto, I mean, even though this was like the biggest, I guess, economic disaster, like Enron level, I mean, crypto is still a pretty small market when it comes to the overall market. It's very, very small in regards to everything else. It's not yet come into its own. So,
and it's been shrinking a lot in the last year. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely had an undue sort of bubble that a lot of people make it analogous to the, you know, .com collapse. I think we're going to see some big victories out. I mean, some of the ones that will emerge from this are the ones that are going to last. So I think this is a good sort of cleansing process. I'm not saying it was good that FTX did all that scammery, but I'm saying, you know, things that will emerge out of this, especially Bitcoin, in my view, which is, you know, the standard is kind of the gold of crypto.
Yeah, it's kind of cleaning out a lot of the scams, which is going to leave behind whatever has staying power.
Resilience, exactly. Yeah. So, but I don't know if it's cleaning out the whole cabal. I think that's getting a little ahead of ourselves. I think that you know, the cabal has centuries of money, you know, in
true, right.
In a lot of different arenas. I mean, just take something like the Vatican. I mean, the Vatican is kind of falling, I would say, and it's a big part of this world power structure. But I mean, it's not gone yet. So, you know, Francis is still up there pushing global a world religion. He's still up there pushing, you know, inclusive capitalism, which is part of the Great Reset. So, you know, we got a good ways to go.
What about the fact that even Tucker Carlson went public recently on Fox with a piece about the pedo elite, and then we've seen more people in Hollywood becoming vocal about it. Of course, some of them were killed shortly thereafter, but some are not dead. And there seems to be even what is it, that Balenciaga fashion company with all the pedo kid teddy bears and bondage and stuff like that. There seems to be, at least this issue is now rising to public consciousness in a way that it hasn't before. Do you give that any significance?
Yeah, well, I mean, in fact, this just happened this week. There's so many catalyzing events like this that wake everybody up that I actually forgot that one, because it just happened, right? I mean, I'm over here thinking about FTX, which is like, you know, 2 weeks ago. And then you have the everybody jumping on board with this, you know, corporation, a brand that does a whole bunch of junk, basically. To me, it looked like a bunch of like knickknacks and junk. So
I never even heard of that brand.
I didn't either until this popped up. Yeah. but I'm glad to see that people are waking up to this. And you know, it actually makes me think of Zoolander. I mean, if you remember in Zoolander, it's like talking about how the fashion world is a bunch of mind controlled, you know, slaves, basically.
True.
So I'm just thinking, like, this is like, do we live in Zoolander? I mean, is that the world we live in? But yeah, I think that's another great catalyzing event. And that has to do with the desire of the elite really to degrade the normal population, people that are wholesome and healthy. From the elite vantage point, part of the way that they control and rule people is to debase and to degrade And pop culture has a big role in doing that. That's, you know, part of what I've talked about in a lot of my books and you know, all the other people that we interview, and going all the way back to the 1960s, you know, I mean, even Tom O'Neill, right, who's a sort of a mainline writer, you know, he just put out a book about Manson in the 1960s, and that basically tying into, you know, intelligence operations, and Rogan had him on. And so now even mainline writers are really, again, vindicating what we've been saying about pop culture being this agent to toxify and to debase everybody else. And that's just a classic elite strategy of controlling people, is getting them, you know, enslaved to their passions, enslaved to wickedness, blinding them, and then controlling them and leading them basically to, you know, ultimately their own self-destruction and demise. I mean, they're pushing in Canada right now, they're pushing these suicide pods. I saw an ad.
I was like,
are we in Logan's Run? I mean, I was writing movie analyses about Logan's Run 10 years ago saying, I'm worried that, you know, this old 70s movie is predicting a euthanasia-based, you know, dystopia, eugenics-based future. And then here we are. Oh, yeah, of course, we're going to have suicide pods in Canada. So it's interesting that it's a lot of these countries that are under the dominion, the Queen's dominion, are the ones that are pushing all of this, you know, hardcore stuff like that. So, I mean, that's who's ruling us. And so they put it in our face. That's what the Balenciaga stuff is, throwing it in your face to debase you.
But it seems like the globalist efforts are falling short of what they wanted, right? So the vaccines, for example, have not killed anywhere near a billion people yet. They've killed tens of millions, probably, most likely. Those are the best numbers I have globally. And somewhere over a million in the United States, but that's still like less than 1/3 of 1% of the population. So it hasn't like taken down the country yet. I understand it's still going. But a lot of other things, like Disney trying to push all this grooming and pedophilia and trans on children and everything, the backlash has been huge. Disney's losing billions of dollars. They just had to replace their CEO. All their super child gay movies are failing because parents are like, I'm not going to take my son, my 7-year-old daughter or son, to a gay child's animation, porn light Disney film, you know? So isn't it failing also in a lot of ways?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Disney thing is fascinating because, you know, for so long, and they've had such a monopoly and they've been, you know, buying out all these different companies and almost gaining control of, you know, of media in the sense of pop culture and all that. I mean, Disney is the engine of that. And so to see them taking these big hits like this, I think is great. And I think that the more that we continue to do what we do, the more possibility there is for victory against these entities, even though they seem like juggernauts, they seem like they're, you know, unstoppable because they're so big and so much money. When people start realizing that it's an attack on them, you know, then if the money's gone, they lose. That's it. Right.
Right.
So, yeah, I think you're right about that. I think we are seeing major victories. I think they are off in terms of the timeline. And now that I think about it, you know, Brzezinski years ago, he had that talk before he died where he was like, there was a talk he gave, I don't remember if it was at the CFR or where, but he was basically saying that we're behind on our agenda. So we're going to have to step this up. And a lot of the global elite texts, such as like Jacques Attali's book, Brief History of the Future, or Ray Kurzweil's books, they kind of set these time dates like 2030, 2040, 2050. And they want to have certain things done by those decade increments in their actuaries, quite literally, right? I mean, they talk about it in the books. So I think that what happened was that when we hit 2020, there were certain things that they had not gotten to yet that they hoped had been done. And that was, in my view, a big part of why the COVID scam happened, was to further this agenda. And when you go back and you look at all of the exercises, Crimson Contagion, Clade X, Lockstep, Event 201, all of those exercises in many ways, the SPARS document, they really planned out what happened in those 2 years. I mean, almost, you know, down to the hashtags. So we know they're planning these things out. We know they have different cards they can play. Like, for example, in the Rockefeller 2010 lockstep document, it's 4 different scenarios. And they played that first scenario, lockstep. They're going to play that other one that has to do with everything being automated and everything being run on the carbon scam. I think that's what they're going to do next. So my concern is that they're going to try to keep pushing this to get more done quicker. But I think the vaccine thing in terms of COVID and all that, my view was that that was – I mean, I think they were really damaging shots for sure, but I think that they weren't initially trying to go after everyone per se. What they wanted to do was see how effective this would be, and judging on the numbers of people that went along or didn't go along, see if they would roll out like the next phase, right? Because remember, Bill Gates was talking about how, well, the next pandemic is going to be a lot worse. Get ready for the next one, which I took to be like, you know, okay, so there's going to be a part two to this, right? This is going to be a sequel to this story. Klaus talking about cyber polygon. That's going to be even worse than the COVID. So I would say that, you know, probably what they're going to do to speed things up even further for this upcoming decade to hit their targets for 2030 is we could be looking at economic collapse, another phase of this so-called pandemic, or something worse, which is really effective in killing people, perhaps. And economic collapse. So cyber polygon, pandemic, economic collapse seem to be what they keep talking about over and over and over.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing about that is that, you know, COVID took everybody by surprise.
Yeah.
And people were scared into obedience, I think, in a lot of cases. Because, but now that in many cases and across many states in the U.S., cooler heads have prevailed. There have even been a lot of local laws passed that say, like, you can't shut down churches or schools, for example, or that you can't force vaccine mandates on people. It seems like if they try a second pandemic, at least in the United States, they would have to make it 10 times scarier.
Yeah,
it would have to sucker people into it. Right. They got to have like blood coming out of people's eyeballs on TV or something, which maybe they will do that, but it's not going to be easy for them because there's a lot of skepticism right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, probably then, you know, if people don't buy into that, the most likely scenario would be a form of economic collapse triggered by something, you know, in terms of a cyber pandemic is what, you know, Klaus talked about. And yeah. I watched the whole presentation. I read the whole thing about cyber polygon, and for those that don't know, it was a war game that a bunch of countries and corporations, like, you know, Fortune 100 tech companies participated in. Even some companies that weren't tech companies participated in it. And they had these two teams. They had like a red team and a blue team. And they were like doing these mock hacking back and forth. And the weirdest part of the whole document wasn't about hackers. It was that anybody who expressed doubt about the official stories of anything were classed as the bad cyber actors. So in other words, if you doubt any of the official stories, you are then part of the cyber terrorists. That's what's in there. It's pretty crazy. Yes. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, like get that across either. That seems really outlandish. Like to, but maybe with, you know, remember when Obama handed over the what ICANN to the United Nations or something. I mean, maybe they can shut everything down with that. I don't know, but. Maybe cyber polygon is the card they would play next, given the skepticism about pandemics.
Well, that brings me to Twitter. I want to ask your opinion on Elon Musk, what he's doing, and the scene on Twitter. Number one, do you think he's going to honor his promise of general amnesty, which technically he should bring back Alex Jones too? Then, and I'm waiting to see if that's going to happen. don't hold your breath, right? But if he does, then, you know, Apple's saying they're going to remove Twitter from Apple phones. And then Elon says, well, we'll release our own hardware. That's a great way to destroy Apple also, is by having everybody say, well, my iPhone's useless if I can't use Twitter on it. I'm going to go buy the Elon Musk Tesla phone. I mean, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, this is the danger here. It's a kind of a double-edged sword because we're all sort of enjoying this drama as it plays out with, you know, Elon making everybody mad. We also have to be guarded and concerned about, well, but is he going to try to create the X app, which replaces everything else and kind of like is modeled on these, you know, Chinese singular monopolistic systems?
Right. I mean,
you know, that's a danger. I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't have any set opinion. I've just kind of been, you know, watching the Elon stuff as an observer. So I don't really have any pro or con on it. I'm just kind of in the middle, neutral about it. I mean, I hope that he continues to support free speech. We've seen a couple things that suggest that he is. You know, Trump comes back, but, you know, is that really, like you said? I mean, well, if it's just picking and choosing a couple popular people, you know, like Trump with 60 million, 67 million Twitter followers. Okay. But what about the people who, you know, have been gone? A lot of investigative journalists, a lot of people like Alex, a lot of people who, you know, done great work who, you know, they should also
a lot of doctors.
Oh yeah. I forgot about all the doctors that were booted for being correct, being right. punished for being right.
Yeah, and investigative journalists, and of course anybody saying there are only two genders and what have you. Essentially, yeah. The entire Twitter censorship team was a bunch of kind of left-wing radicals just censoring all conservative voices. Nothing different than that. That was their job, censor conservatives.
Yeah, well, so I think we'll see, you know, how sincere he is based on what he actually accomplishes. And, you know, again, you know, Elon has a history of kind of saying a lot of things.
True.
So, but what about what's he actually doing? So we'll wait and see what he does. Right.
I hope it doesn't say we'll have general amnesty on Twitter when the Tesla Cybertruck is finally available.
I'm how integrated all this stuff is going to be. Right. Like, I mean, is it going to be OK? So, you know, we know Zuckerberg's bad. We know, you know, these other tech gurus are bad that run. But what about what if we end up in a situation where we're all on one thing? Right.
Right.
I mean, in other words, there might be the intention here to basically be the internet. Right. Like, let's replace.
Well, YouTube. You make a really good point. You know, centralization is dangerous. Right. So decentralization is power to the people. Right. Whether we're talking about crypto structures or multiple platforms to choose from and so on, or financial transactions. So centralizing it all under Elon Musk or any human being is a dangerous endeavor.
Well, I've heard whispers, and this is, again, I have no idea how true this is, but some whispers are that the idea is to have something new that replaces what even YouTube is, right? So long form content, streaming content, monetization of content, WeChat model mixed with YouTube, mixed with integrated into Twitter is probably what's coming.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of goods to that if he does maintain this free speech approach. But I mean, remember, and again, I don't know if this is going to be the case with Elon, but remember in the case of Silicon Valley itself in the 2000s and the 2010s, a lot of us, you, me, a lot of us, we went onto these platforms because they had a libertarian Silicon Valley bent. They were all about their libertarianism and, oh, come to our platform, we have free speech. Right. They got everybody's time, effort, and energy on their platforms. Everybody put all their time and energy into that, built up their platforms, made them into these zillion-dollar companies. Then they flip on a dime and turn on all the censorship after they've gotten everybody. So we have to be worried about that same trick being run again. But hopefully it won't. I don't know. Maybe it won't.
No, well said. But I happen to think that I think there are a lot of smart people working on decentralization tech right now that's going to make probably – I think Twitter will be obsolete in 10 years, frankly. I think Facebook will be obsolete. I think YouTube – In fact, I think even our own platform, Brighteon.com, as currently structured, will be obsolete in 10 years because I think they're going to be decentralized, peer-to-peer, more consensus-based video distribution systems that maybe are modeled after some of the concepts that were used in blockchain or crypto, but for content delivery and are uncensorable.
Yeah, that's the model that Rockfin operates on, which is a blockchain model, yeah.
Okay, yeah, and you have a channel on Rockfin. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your main website, jaysanalysis.com.
Yeah, so there it's really just a collection of everything that I've been doing and writing about for the last, 13 years or so, 12 years. So there's a lot of essays about geopolitics, a lot of essays about philosophy, theology, tons and tons of movie reviews. I kind of started out doing a lot of film reviews and decoding the symbolism of movies and that was the first two books are based on the film analyses. But there's also now a whole lot of podcasts. There's an archive behind the paywall, which is, you know, lectures, interviews. For example, lecturing through the Global Elites book series, where we go through about 50 of the writings of the elite, the entire book, including some really big, boring books like Tragedy and Hope. We have 8 lectures through the totality of that. So there's a whole wealth of material there. We do a lot of debates with atheists, with Muslims. You know, we got all kinds of stuff. So it's a vast archive at the website, and then a lot of other kind of exclusive content, unique content over on Rockfin. And then I got the books in the shop. So yeah, then I usually host the Fourth Hour of Alex on Fridays.
And if I could say your areas of expertise, but I mean, you tell me, but my understanding is philosophy, but also symbolism. You're really well schooled on symbolism, both throughout history and modern day, and also some mythological uses of such symbols as well. Is that correct?
I think you could say that. Yeah, I'm pretty good in that area. A lot of my grad work focused on that and propaganda, kind of looking at the way that Hollywood uses symbolism to program us. So yeah, I think that's fair. And that's really what, you know, I focused on the first couple of books, was how symbols are used to train us, entrain us, to program us, mainly through film. I didn't really go into like music, or which also has a lot of that same stuff going on in it. But yeah, my books, I mainly focus on movies. And then when I did another philosophy book, I don't know if you probably can't see it down there, but it's called Meta Narratives. That's essays on symbolism. So yeah, that the last book that I put out before this one is just a little brief, like a 200-page book on the philosophy of symbols. So yeah.
Then what is the most intriguing recent movie you think that uses a lot of symbolism to try to achieve or to impart a message perhaps to the subconscious mind of the viewer, or however the mechanism works?
Well, so we just watched a recent Netflix series, which I watched it, I think, in 2018 when it came out. It's called Maniac, and that has Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. And this is a weird kind of quirky millennial style surrealist story where you have about six episodes based around people going into a pharmaceutical company to have an AI computer and a big drug matrix system basically fix their traumas. So a lot of references to MKUltra, a lot of references to kind of Jungian psychoanalysis and archetypes and this kind of stuff. And I won't spoil it, but the series was full of symbolism, full of, you know, archetypes, patterns, this kind of stuff. But actually ended up having it was one of the last Netflix things that I've ever seen that I thought were decent. And it's, you know, 2018. So after that, Netflix kind of went totally into the domain of propaganda. But actually had a good message. It was like pharmaceuticals and tech are not going to solve, you know, the problems that we have in relationships, problems that we have in terms of, you know, relating to our mom or our dad or our archetypes, right? This kind of stuff. So I thought that was a really well done show. It kind of had some Gnostic themes in it, but overall the message was good and quite a bit of symbolism. So that's the one that comes to mind.
Okay, wow. Well, that's great to hear. I really appreciate all the work that you do, Jay. Every time that I see that you're hosting InfoWars, I'm really happy to see you. I tune in, I listen. I'm just amazed at the breadth of your knowledge, frankly. You must read a lot of books, and you must be very curious about the structure of the world.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. We do a lot of reading around here. Both my wife and I, we pretty much read every day. So yeah, we love books. We're both bibliophiles, and yeah, we try to focus on, you know, four or five main areas. We do geopolitics, global elite books. We do film analysis. We do philosophy, theology, and we do kind of weird comedy. So we do all those things. So thank you.
Okay. Well, that's great. I think it's fantastic. Thank you for your contributions to this space. And thank you for joining me this evening. I really appreciate your time and you staying up late for us. I think people are going to love this discussion. So
night out. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So the website, folks, is jaysanalysis.com. And his most recent book is called Essays on Theology and Philosophy. And that's Jay Dyer, D-Y-E-R, is his full name. So thank you all for watching and listening. And as always, feel free to repost this interview on your own channels and other platforms as well. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the platform where we can have discussions like this without having to use secret code words because it's all censored. No, we just say what we mean. It's awesome. Thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care.